Psycho Man.
Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to the Motorcycle Man Podcast. This is Ted, your host, and this is episode 417, and it's going to be a great episode. Today, I'm interviewing our good friend Nick Adams, our travel author, Nick Adams, and he's here to talk to us today about the perfected motorcycle. This would be the Panther, created by Fallon and Moore. All right, so but before we get into that, let's get into some business first. The Motorcycle Man Podcast is brought to you by Scorpion Helmets. Now they're offering high quality, innovative motorcycle helmets and technical apparel at an incredible value. So to learn more, get on over to scorpionusa.com. And Wild Ass Seats. Now you can improve your comfort and ability to stay in the saddle longer with a cushion from Wild Ass Seats. So if you're tired of those painful pressure points and fatigue, go to wild-ass.com and tell the real Craig Johnson that you want a cushion and the Motorcycle Men Podcast told you that you should get one. So do that right away. Okay. And Tobacco Motorwear, as always, for the best in casual riding gear for men and women, there's only one place you should be going, and that is Dave's Pants at Tobacco Motorwear. Visit them at tobaccomotorwear.com. That's tobaccomotorwear.com. And our listeners will get 10% off your order when you use the code MOTOMEN. Your safety is worth it. So get on over there, get in Dave's pants, and tell them the Motorcycle Men Podcast sent you. All right, time for that interview with Nick. Joining me today, all the way from the Great White North in Canada, our good friend, travel author Nick Adams. Hello, Nick. How are you?
I'm fine, Ted. It's good to see you again.
Yes, wonderful to see you, too. It's like, how's everything with you? You've been busy, I says, right?
Well, you know, it's winter. and my motor goods is in pieces on somebody else's desk. So.
No. The Eldorado?
The Eldorado, yeah.
Oh, no. What's wrong with it?
Oh, when I was coming back from a trip in Northern Ontario in the late fall, I noticed a little ticking in the engine. You know this story from your own experiences. And I contacted a good friend of mine who's a bit of a motor goods guru. He had a motorcycle shop in Ottawa for most of his life, working life.
Right.
So he came over and listened. He came over on his Ducati, actually, a 1972, I think, Ducati. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he listened to the bike and decided that it wasn't sounding right.
Oh.
So I took the engine out and dropped it over at his place, and he called me actually yesterday.
You say that like, you know, it's like you're making a pizza. You just like you took it out of the oven and there it was ready. I took the engine out.
So many times. Anyway, I dropped it over at his place, and yesterday he called me to say that he'd started to crack into it and had found one broken piston ring.
Oh, no way.
And in England they call them gudgeon pins, but here it's wrist pins.
Okay.
The bearing was shot. It was sloppy in the end of the conrod. But the bike rolled on just fine. I didn't notice any difference. Oh, yeah, and one of the cylinder head gaskets was blown as well.
So that could have ended in disaster in one of your dirt road adventures.
As I say, it ran all the way home. I didn't make any difference except a little noise.
You know, I sometimes run in the Eldorado. You've taken that bike on a lot of trips, a lot of dirt roads, gravel roads. And I have to think that thing is probably the most resilient motorcycle on the planet. It's been through so much, but it just keeps going.
It's a bit like George Washington's axe, though. It's got a different gearbox. It's got different cylinder heads. It's had new pistons and cylinders. You know, just keep replacing parts until it keeps running.
Right. So the only thing original on it is the nameplate that says Eldorado. Right?
That's about it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, for those out there who've been living under a rock and have no idea who you are, you've been on the show dozens of times. Tell us, everybody, who you are, your motorcycle self, and what you do.
I'm Nick Adams. I originally from the UK, as I suspect some of the audience can possibly detect.
No, can't tell at all.
I've been in Canada now for, 45 years, something like that.
Wow.
And I guess since I retired from being an archaeologist, my main focus of attention has been riding motorbikes and writing about them. And publishing a whole series of short, but I hope entertaining books.
Definitely entertaining. How many books do you have out now? 11?
You know what? I've lost count.
Really?
I think it's maybe 10 motorcycle or motorcycle-related books. And then I'm just working on my third short novel.
Right. Okay. So I was right. So you have 11 motorcycle books out.
11? Oh, 11, well, yes. There you go.
You have your hiking books. You got one hiking book. You got one archaeology books, and then two fiction books. You're just a very prolific writer. Keep them coming.
Well, you know, that's winter.
That's true.
If you can't ride, write. Yeah.
I like that. If you can't ride, write. That's great. How many bikes do you have now?
I currently have 4 in the garage. Well, 3.5.
Okay. Well, let's assume it's a whole bike eventually. And what are your other 3?
The 2007 Moto Guzzi Breva 1100.
Okay, and that, which is actually kind of new to you.
Oh yeah, that's my newest bike for a long time. And my 1986 Suzuki Cavalcade.
Right.
Which, if people don't recognize, is a great big sort of Goldwing tour type.
Mm-hmm.
And recently acquired, I don't know what I was thinking, but there you go. 1992 Goldwing GL 1500.
Wow. You're getting bigger.
Yeah, it's you know, most people my age, I'm, what am I, 73, are usually going downsizing.
Yeah.
You know, buying things like the Royal Enfield 400, 450 or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm going the other way. I'm adding weight. I'm up to 800 and something pounds now.
When did you get the Goldwing?
November, I think.
Really?
No, it can't have been. It must have been before that, because I did a long trip to Quebec on it. Maybe it was September, October time.
Oh, wow. What brought that on?
Well, I started off on a long trip on the Cavalcade.
Right.
Intending to do this. A trip to do some hiking in Quebec on 3 different mountains that I'd decided I wanted to climb. And I got about 50 miles into the ride and realized that the battery wasn't charging. And of course, it's pouring rain at the same time.
Of course.
So I made a quick decision and rode home and managed to make it home just on battery power. My good friend Norm, I was intimidated by the amount of bodywork to pull off to, and I don't know anything about electrics, and I knew something was wrong.
I get it.
So I sold it to my good buddy Norm for nothing.
You sold the Cavalcade?
Well, it's a long story.
Oh, boy. Wow. I may have to have you tell me that story.
did I sell it to him or not? Anyway, he had it in his hands to fix, because he likes delving into things like this. And it ended up being the regulator, but it took a lot of sort of bodywork removal to get to the point where it could be repaired. But he had just finished working on tidying up, should I say, this Goldwing, which is in pretty good condition, even despite the fact it's got 200,000 kilometers on it.
No way, really? Wow.
Yeah, what's that, about 112,000 miles. But it runs and looks like new. So I gave him a little cash and rode home on the Goldwing. And then once he'd fixed the Cavalcade, I rode over and had a look at it and decided I still loved it. But you know, the joke is there's so little value in these bikes, even though they're fabulous cross-country machines.
Yeah.
That I just gave him a little cash back and paid for some of the parts and ended up with both of them.
You know, I'm getting this. What we have here is we have an addict and a dealer situation. Where Norm being your dealer.
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, his garage is a constant circus of new bikes, and not new. I mean, he's always buying stuff, fixing it, and turning it over.
calling you up. Hey, I've got another bike you want to check out.
Well, the same thing happened with the Pacific Coast that I had for a while.
Oh, boy. But he's also been part of your Panther addiction, correct?
In a very peripheral way.
Peripheral way.
Yeah, so he's not the guy from whom I bought the Panther.
Oh, no. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, mostly I wanted to talk to you about the Panther. Because one of your books, which I had, again, confusion through my end, I had never listened to the audiobook or even read the audiobook about the Perfected Motorcycle, which basically is all about the Panther.
Yep.
Now, can you give us a little history about the Panther, who makes it, and what's the addiction about?
Okay, well, the Panther's a single-cylinder, either 600 or 650cc motorcycle from the dark ages of British motorcycling.
Dark ages?
The dark ages, yeah. Well, you know, the antediluvian times. Cullen and Moore was one of the first companies in Britain to start producing motorbikes, and they were incredibly innovative. I think I'm right in saying that they were the first motorcycle manufacturer ever to use the engine as an integral part of the frame.
Really?
There's no lower frame rails. The engine's part of the structure of the bike.
That's interesting.
Anyway, these bikes, the generations I had two of them as a kid, as a teenager, and then one quite recently as an adult. And there's a guy in New Zealand who's a Panther fanatic. He's had the same motorbike, Penelope, since the 1970s. He's ridden it all over North America, South America. He's ridden it from Beijing to Amsterdam.
Wow.
Asia and Europe. And I'm just reading a book here now, which you might like, actually, Ted.
The Big Sit.
It's about riding around Australia on the same 1965 Panther.
I'm definitely going to have to read that. Definitely.
If you think I'm funny with my breakdowns of the side of the road and that kind of thing, I'm nothing compared to him.
Oh, really? Oh, good. Anyway, I may have to talk to this man.
Yeah, you'd love him, I think. Yeah. Anyway, that was a sidetrack. As I say, as a teenager, I had a couple of bikes. My first big bike was a 1950 Panther 600.
Wow.
They were basically designed for pulling a sidecar. So they weren't fast, but they were very, you know, heavy flywheel and long stroke engine and lots of torque. You would see them on the British roads with somebody on the passenger seat and two or three kids in the sidecar, you know, maybe even pulling a small trailer heading down to Cornwall for the summer holidays.
That's a little over the top. Wow. So it's kind of very utilitarian.
Yeah, as Des, that guy in Australia, talks about them, he calls them a working class Yorkshire girl.
Oh, wow.
Because they were the sort of classic working man's bike before they could afford it, before people could afford small cars.
Oh, wow. So yeah, it's a point A to point B bike.
Yeah,
basically. Okay. So now you've had three in your lifetime.
I have, yeah.
So, and what models did you have? Because apparently they had different models of the Panther.
Yeah, the first one I had was a 1950 M100, which was a 600 single, big sloping single cylinder. Like, think of the front end of the Harley.
Yeah.
And lean it down through a few more degrees, and that's the basically the look.
Yeah.
And then when I was at college, I had a 1964, I think it was, M120, because in the search for more power, they increased the stroke and the bore a little bit, I think, and threw in an extra 50 cc's.
Yeah.
But they weren't really as smooth and as good as the 600s. The 600 was a sweet engine.
All right. And then your latest.
Now, my latest was, what year was that? I think that was a 1960 M120.
Okay.
But I bought from a friend of mine in Northern Ontario.
Wow. And how long did you have each of these bikes?
The first one, that's an interesting story. Because the first one I had, I bought it before I had a license to ride a big bike. You know, in England, you have to take a test on a smaller bike first before you can ride a big bike. And my parents, of course, said, "You're never having a big bike."
Mm-hmm.
You know, never having a motorbike, never bringing a motorbike to this house. So I rented a garage and bought this bike and kept it hidden from my parents. And then as soon as I passed my motorcycle test, my friend and I rode it up to Scotland, where after a couple of weeks of glorious riding around and having a great time, it broke down in the pouring rain. So we abandoned it at the side of the road and hitchhiked home.
That just cracks me up. You're just like, we're just going to leave it here. And I was like, what?
Well, we hadn't got a massive amount of money invested in this thing. The end result of that story was I got called up by the police and they said, "We've got your motorbike here, come and get it." So I had to borrow some money from my mother to catch the train back up to Scotland to I was a bit embarrassed and a little unsure what was going to happen, but I went to the police station and the cop just, said, "It's in the garage out back." So I went out and had a look, managed to get it started. Told him that I got it started. He said, "Right, off you go then." There was no question of any kind of fine.
Oh my God, can you imagine if that happened now?
Oh yeah.
Forget it.
It was a great kindness.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my God.
Yeah. But shortly after that I got rid of it, and I honestly can't remember why or what happened, but it sort of went out of my life.
Yeah. And then you felt the need to get another.
I did. Well, I needed a bike to get up and back to college.
Yeah.
So,
the Panther was it.
The Panther. Yeah, well, you know what you like. You only look at Harley Davidsons.
I know. What are you going to do?
Yeah, exactly. So at that time, I only looked at Panthers.
Well, is the Panther the kind of bike, you got to explain why, what's the attraction to it, to so many?
They plod.
They plod.
They're not a young man's motorcycle.
Yeah, okay. I get that.
They're immensely charming. There's something about the way that that big, long-stroke, single-cylinder engine, I think that it revs, top revs are something like 4,200. I mean,
really?
We're talking traction engine type stuff here.
I was always fascinated by the little gauge. What was that little gauge that was on the headlight?
Oh, that was an ammeter.
Oh, is that what that was? Okay, that's up there. And then I believe this is the same motorcycle that had the super long rear view mirrors with the long.
Yeah,
I always thought those were very, very peculiar.
You know, I had to have those so I could see past my shoulders.
Yeah, I believe, as you call the ones on my large, very broad shoulder. So, is that the kind of motorcycle that you own and then you sell and then regret selling it?
For me, yes. I mean, now three times.
It just never dawns on you. You're just like, I'm just going to keep this one, right? You know.
Oh yeah, I don't know what happens, but I think a lot of us do this. We have something that we can't live without for a while, and then we live with it, and then we think we can live without it, and then we find out that we can't.
So, is there another Panther in your future?
I think the reason I got rid of the most recent one, the one that I had over the last few years, was because it wasn't the one from my earliest dreams.
Oh, I see.
It was an M120. It had sophisticated things like rear suspension.
Ooh.
Which the M100 that I had didn't have. It was a hardtail.
But it had the sprung seat though, right?
It did have a sprung seat, although my friend and I butchered that in our attempt to turn it into an easy rider bike and, and put a double seat on it.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, no, it was a... It makes me sorry and sad to think of the things, the abuse that we put that bike to.
But it was an adventure.
Yeah. And, you know, when you're 16, you're bone stupid. So you just do whatever you think. So
whatever works, right. Exactly. Why don't you tell us some about the riding you did on the Panther and what, if any, trouble it gave you? I get the impression it didn't give you any trouble, though.
Well, I wouldn't go quite that far. The most recent one I had, I ended up changing the piston, having to repair one of the studs that holds the cylinder head on, a whole bunch of things. But basically anything that happened was repairable. It wasn't, you know, none of these things were sort of life-stopping events.
Right. Well, now, with taking, for example, you got the 72 Eldorado, and of course all the other bikes that you have are, no, they're not new, you know, but with the Panther, now you've taken your other bikes on massive great adventures. Would you do the same on the Panther?
I did. I never took it on some, you know, cross-continent trips or anything like that. But I did do some decent trips. Recently, there have been some sort of off-road trail mapping produced for the part of the world that I live in.
Right.
And these are basically sort of 300 or 400 mile loops linking together gravel roads through the countryside, that kind of thing. Not terribly demanding in terms of, you know, adventure riding.
Right.
You know, they're not off-road. They're off-road in the sense that they're on gravel, but they're not off-road in the sense that they're on, you know, goat tracks or anything like that.
Right. Now, is this the kind of bike you can put panniers on and things like that, or is it just, you know, throw a big backpack on the back and off you go?
No, I've got some throw-over panniers, and that's
okay.
What I use.
All right.
And, yeah, just strap stuff down and go.
Yeah.
But the thing is, with a bike like the Panther, you know, they were designed to be all conditions bikes. They've got 19-inch wheels front and back.
Right.
Interchangeable wheels, by the way.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah, drum brakes front and rear, so the drum is the same on the front as the same on, as the rear. So you can just swap the, you know, if the back tire starts getting worn out, you just swap it for the front wheel.
Oh, that's crazy.
And actually, if you had the sidecar that was made to fit the bike, all three wheels were interchangeable.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. See, that's what you got to do. Get another Panther and get the sidecar. Then you're set.
The problem with bikes like the Panther is you're being a little bit mean to them to travel at the kinds of speeds that we customarily travel.
Yeah.
On our roads, like it would run at 60 miles an hour, but I never felt that it was really being very kind to it.
Right.
You know, happy all day at 50-55, but 60 was stretching it.
Right.
I mean, if you really wound it up, it might get over 70-75, but you know, that's really abusing us,
kind of brutalizing that single cylinder, just not happy there. But you know, on the gravel roads that you ride, you're obviously not going fast on those, and I think there's probably sufficient gravel to take you around the country, no?
Yeah. I mean, in our area, there's a lot of back roads, and we did do quite a bit of exploring on it with them, and it was great. It you know, you can just plonk along, and it sounds wonderful, and it would just find its way around.
Right.
It was good.
Now, that wasn't outfitted with a windscreen, was it?
No.
No. Does that bother you?
No.
No?
In fact, I often take the windscreens off my bikes because I don't like them.
Really?
Yeah, I don't have a windscreen on the Eldorado at the moment. And last time I went across to British Columbia, I didn't have a windscreen at all.
Oh, wow. Now, but when you ride like the Eldorado with no windscreen, and then you ride something like the Cavalcade or now the Goldwing, which has windshield, do you find it a pleasurable difference?
Without a windscreen is always much quieter.
Without a windscreen, it is?
Without a windscreen, yeah.
Really?
Windscreens, you know, even the best windscreens, you often get turbulence and wind noise and rattles. And,
yeah,
you
know, like a little bit. Stuff. Well, when you say rattles, you mean like parts of the bike are rattling? Or parts of you are rattling? I'm not
sure. Yes.
Yeah, because I don't.
Green putts are allowed to rattle.
That's true. Yeah, because I don't notice that on my. I have ridden motorcycles without windscreens, and I kind of appreciate having one.
You look through your windscreen, do you not?
I do. Yeah, on both of my bikes. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I don't mind a windscreen as long as I can look over it. I don't like looking through the windscreen.
Yeah, I can agree with that especially when it rains. If I get caught in a rainstorm, and then it just becomes a total nightmare because now I can't see through the windscreen.
Yeah, you know,
and I have to actually pick my head up and actually kind of look over it. Of course, then it's hitting you in the face. Oh boy. what's the furthest you've ridden on the Panther?
I did a 500-mile loop on it.
One
time. I just sort of round through Algonquin Park and up local back roads and such with an overnight in one of the provincial parks. That was the longest single trip, but I did multiple, you know, 200 or 300-mile days.
Oh wow! Really?
Yeah.
That's nice. Wow. All right. Cool. And then, as far as it goes for, well, extensive trips. Well, now that you don't own one, do you have the desire to get another one?
I think if I could get my hands on a 1950 or a 1951 M100. Yeah, I would probably. But they're sort of priced out of my range at the moment.
No kidding. So, I mean, yeah. how much have the prices changed? Well, obviously, years, we know what goes by. But has there been a great increase in demand for that kind of bike?
Well, it's hard to know at the moment with so many motorcycle aficionados and people are aging out of motorcycling a little bit, so the kinds of people that used to be interested in older motorbikes are now often trying to get rid of them because they're, you know, they're sort of getting rid of their collections. And bikes like the Panther used to be, you know, to use an English term, considered grey porridge. You know, not very interesting because they're not fast, they're not sexy, such like. But for a certain kind of person, they are very attractive.
Yeah.
And there's a sort of almost an inverse snobbery now.
No way, really?
Yeah, given that they were sort of such a basic working man's machine.
Yeah.
To a certain kind of collector, that's a very attractive thing.
Wow, and I have to imagine. Well, this probably has a cult following, no?
Yeah, I mean the worldwide Panther Owners Club is incredibly active. They manufacture parts. You can get a brand new manufactured cylinder head.
Oh, and
new clutch systems and all kinds of things like that. As long as your pockets are deep enough.
Fully restored, operating 1960 Panther. What's that going for these days? M120, M100, doesn't matter.
Most of them aren't fully restored. Most of them are... These are bikes that people ride.
Oh, okay.
They're not... They don't tend to be showroom or, you know, show field type bikes.
Okay.
But I would think in American dollars, probably 6,000, 7,000, 8,000, something like
really?
That.
Really? Are you kidding me? Really?
No.
Wow. Oh, wow. And that's that's amazing. Jeez. That's more than I paid for my Sportster. And it's a 2003.
Well, it's infinitely better than your Sportster.
Oh, I don't know about that, Nick. let's not get it crazy now. Okay. You know, it's funny because my Sportster, or pretty much any Sportster, I think, would be ideal for like gravel roads and things like that. But I just can't. Because my bike is so damn pretty, I just can't bring myself to throw, you know, a more aggressive tire on it and take it onto dirt or gravel roads. I just can't bring myself to that. I want to get another one so that I could just do that with it. But you know, I guess that's
We all have different attitudes and different interests. I mean, I understand the desire that people have to keep their bikes spotless and, you know, looking like new and such like. And I suffer from that to some degree.
Yeah.
Like with the Breather, I do ride it on rough roads and through swamps and things like that. But I'm a little more fussy about keeping that relatively clean.
Yeah.
But, you know, I like the fact that when a bike acquires a certain patina that looks as though it's actually used.
Oh, I absolutely agree. 100% agree. Like that. Like when I look at some of the older Harley Davidsons, the ones that have been ridden, and they got that little bit of patina to them, it's like you don't want them to be fully restored or pristine. They look great just the way they are.
Yeah,
you know, there's something to be said about that. And not getting back to the Panther, not finding one fully restored but has that I've been ridden patina to it. It can be very attractive and probably keeps the cost way up.
Yeah, I think a patina ridden working bike,
yeah,
is just as valuable as a fully restored one in the minds of the kinds of people that would buy a Panther.
Right. Wow.
They'd be more interested in what's going on inside than they would the appearance of the outside.
Yeah. But it's not the kind of motorcycle you're taking to, I guess, a rally or anything like that, but more so you're taking to a gathering at a Tim Hortons, probably.
I think many of the ones in Britain are ridden to, you know, annual rallies.
No kidding.
And really? People ride them from all over the country. They don't tend to be trailered.
Oh, that's good. That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Nick would never trailer his motorcycle.
Nick wouldn't. Well, Nick trailers his motorcycle when it's broken.
Oh, my God. So do you have any plans to get another one? Are you thinking?
No, I haven't really.
No. But of course, after this interview, you are going to start looking at, right?
Probably. I guess what's the word for it? It wouldn't be repatriate because I'd have to get one from Britain. Let's put it that way.
Oh, really? I mean, are they hard to find locally and like in Canada?
Oh, very few were ever imported into Canada. Strangely enough, New Zealand and Australia, there are lots of Panthers.
No way.
But for some reason, Canada never really imported very many.
Hmm.
So the bulk of them are in Britain.
So we can look on Cycle Exchange and see if there's any available in the U.S.
And there might be one.
Really? Wow. Yeah.
Actually, there's probably more than one because I sold the one I had to a collector in Minneapolis.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so I tell you what, because I as motorcyclists do, we always browse, you know, the want ads and things like that, looking at motorcycles, and I do this regularly, just because I'm stupid, and if I will purposely look for a Panther, and if I find one, I will send you the link.
And when you win the lottery.
And when I win the lottery. Oh, I won't buy it. I mean, I'll buy it for you, maybe, but.
That's what I was hoping.
Oh, that's what you were hoping. Oh, man. So, do you have any? Well, now that you got these four, you got your four bikes, and mm-hmm. I guess, in your Goldwing, do you got any new plans for new trips?
In the spring, I hope to go on a big trip again, but.
Yeah,
you know, it all depends on these days fire conditions, flood conditions.
Yeah,
you know, I have to sort of choose my route depending on what's happening in the environment.
That's true too. Yeah,
but I've you know had multiple stabs at heading off towards Yellowknife in the Northwest Territories,
ooh.
And so far I've been skunked for one reason or another.
Oh boy.
I've either ended up, you know, somewhere completely different, like Vancouver Island, or just turned around at the border of Ontario. But this year, maybe it'll be the year.
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't you tell it? Well, you got your new book out, Riding Around on the Breeze. Give us a little clip of that. What's that all about?
You know what? I can't even remember what's in it. I think that's It's basically many of my books are compilations of trips I've done, descriptions of trips I've done.
Sure.
That one I know includes the trip I took on the Goldwing out to Quebec to go hiking.
Oh, wow.
And that was quite an enjoyable adventure because, you know, being a person of a certain age, it's nice to see what you can still do and whether you've still got the legs for it.
Yeah.
So that was a really enjoyable trip.
This one on the cover of the book. You actually have the El Dorado on the cover of this book. So
yeah, that was my last trip of the year. Late fall, I went up to Northern Ontario. There's a Trans-Canada Adventure Trail that runs from Newfoundland all the way across to British Columbia.
Oh, really? And have you ever ridden that from one end to the other?
No. That really is designed for proper ADV and dirt bikes.
Because
there are sections of it that, you know, they're old
logging roads.
Lots of logging roads. I can do the logging road parts.
Yeah.
But I took the El Dorado up to ride just one short section north of the city of Sudbury in Northern Ontario.
Right.
It's about 100 miles perhaps of logging road and then single track, and you know, it's beautiful because it runs along the side of the Wanapate River.
Wow.
For many miles. And you know, the El Dorado is a tough old bird. She just plugs along.
There's not a lot on these roads, are there?
No. I mean, I did encounter one truck, the three guys that were out deer hunting or, you know, like grouse hunting. I don't know what they were doing, but I stopped and chatted to them for a while. But that was the only vehicle I saw, apart from the logging truck that nearly killed me.
Oh, but like, when you were out on these dirt roads, do you have cell signal at all?
No.
Really? So like, if you have run into a problem.
It's my problem.
It's your problem. So you never thought of getting like a satellite phone or something like that, right?
No.
They're usually not that far between cell spots, right?
I don't know where the nearest cell, you know, it's patchy.
No,
but
okay.
You know, people do use these roads, so eventually somebody would be along. Now, you know, it'd be a bit unpleasant if you'd broken your leg or something, but
yeah,
but I always carry, you know, full camping gear, so if I'm stuck somewhere, I just throw up the tent and, you know, wait.
So you just like really just get off the road a little bit and just pitch your tent and that's it?
Yeah.
Really? You never have any like weird encounters with wildlife or anything like that?
No, nobody. Yeah, they don't want bother with you. You know, last thing they want to do is bother with people.
Yeah, yes, this is true. I guess so. Because I would be a little curious because I'm planning a trip myself coming up this summer where it's going to be primarily all camping, and nice. I'm going to be camping along the way in campsites, not roadside camping. But so, and I always wondered about that. You know, what do you do for you know any kind of, you have to charge your stuff. Because you always got your phone and stuff like that, you need to charge that. And you know, what do you do in that case? You know, I don't know.
Well, I have a 12-volt outlet on all my bikes.
Yeah,
so yeah. You can charge your cameras and stuff off that.
Yeah, that's true.
Just make sure you don't take the battery down too low.
Did that? Did that? I charged all my stuff on the bike up in Sturgis, and then I went to go start the bike, and it wasn't there.
Fortunately,
I was able to jump it with my truck. So we don't do that. All right. So, you've got this new book out, Riding Around on the Breeze: Road Tales of a Perpetual Optimist. Do you need to explain that?
I think it's fairly evident, isn't it? I do like riding places where it's, you know, there's not a lot of traffic and it's nice and quiet. And yes, I'm on my own all the time, or usually almost always on my own. And I suppose the optimism part is that I don't assume that something's going to go wrong. And if it does, then I like to think that I'll either be able to sort it out or be patient.
Yeah, so pack your cavalier attitude also when traveling like this, right?
I think you have to, yeah. I mean, I'm not stupid in the sense that I usually have stuff to fix a tire and, you know, do basic maintenance on the road, change a plug if I have to, or fix a carb.
Have you ever done that? Have you ever actually had to change a flat on the side of the road with your Eldorado or any of your other bikes?
Yeah, quite a few times.
Isn't that difficult?
No.
Really?
No, you know, if you've got the right tools, and that's sort of critical thing is to make sure your toolkit covers all the necessary things that are likely to happen.
Right.
And with the Eldorado, after riding on the Trans-Taiga Road up in northern Quebec, we just got to the end of the road and the tire was, you know, completely flat, so we pulled over. My friend Norm was with me at the time, but I had all the stuff. I just laid the bike over on its side.
Really?
In order to attach, to get the back wheel off.
No
kidding. Rather than trying to hoist it up in the air, it was easier just to roll it over on its side and put the wheel off that way.
Wow. And then you have no trouble getting the tire off of the rim itself?
We're not talking about... These are tires with tubes.
Yeah.
So they don't have the same kind of adhesion to the wheel.
I guess so, yeah. Because I know...
There are usually ways, you know, even with a tubeless tire, you can use your side stand as a lever to start the process of extracting
to break the bead and all that.
Break the bead, yeah.
Wow. Because I know just with my two bikes, and I've done a tire or two with mine, and I know what what's the word? I guess PITA, right? It can be. very difficult, but I guess it's a little different when you have a tube. It's a little different. But.
With tubeless, you know, if it's a nail or something, then it should be a relatively easy fix.
You can plug that easily enough, usually. Yeah, usually. That's great. So we were just talking about the Nick's book, The Perfected Motorcycle, Grappling with the Panther. Is that what it is? Is it really grappling?
It was grappling, yeah.
Yeah.
I had to do quite a bit of engineering, shall we say, to get it to the point where it seemed to be running reliably, trustworthy.
Right. But
again, I had that engine out a few times and to pieces.
I like the way you say that. You say that it's like, you know, taking butter out of the fridge. I had the engine out.
Simple bikes, you know, it's just a few bolts and the way it comes.
Wow.
Especially on the Panther that doesn't have a down tube. You know,
That's true, too.
Undo the head steady and undo the plates that connect the bike to the rest of the frame and just drop the engine out.
Off you go. Yeah, your wife doesn't go in the garage, does she?
She doesn't, actually. She long ago gave up bothering.
She tolerates your big boy toys?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, actually, when I discovered the Panther, the most recent Panther, and said I was interested in buying it, and her response was, if you move that table out of the corner, there'll be plenty of room.
Oh, well, see, that's all you need to hear. That's all you need to hear. Yep. That's it. Let's make the change. Here we go. So, listen, how can people learn more about you, your books, and possibly even the Panther?
The easiest way is to go online to Amazon and just search for Nick Adams Motorcycle. That'll pop them up all over the place. They're all published through Amazon and in Kindle, paperback, and audiobook formats.
Right.
So same thing applies to Audible.
Yeah. Like I said, I've listened to them all except for the new one. I'm waiting for my credits to pop up in Audible, and I'll get the latest one. So, I guess you could say I'm a Nick Adams aficionado, so because I have all of your books.
You're a great man, Ted.
Easy there.
I'm discovering a great writer, too.
Oh, well, thank you
I'm
very
really
much.
I'm really enjoying your book.
I'm glad you are. Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, yeah, hopefully it gets better for you as the book goes along. I do have a tendency to ramble a little bit.
There's lots of detail. Let's put it that way.
I guess I can get kind of wordy at times. All right, this is what it is. Say, any closing words for those possibly interested in getting a Panther or a similar small displacement motorcycle?
Make sure you got lots of money in your bank, because those bikes that are now considered to be, you know, vintage, getting and have been fairly costly for quite a while. And I guess the other thing is not to expect it to be able to, you know, run down the superhighway at 80 miles an hour or anything like that. You got to gauge the performance of the bike to, you know, its ancient history.
Right.
But they're out there, I guess. You know, they pop up for sale in the UK from time to time, and they're charming. They're utterly charming.
Charming, that's the word we're going to use. Okay. So, well, look, I want to thank you very much for being on the podcast. As always, a wonderful pleasure speaking with you, and I look forward to having you on again after I go through your latest book. So it'd be great to have you back on the show again.
Be my pleasure. Thanks very much, Ted.
Thank you very much, Nick. Don't go anywhere. I want to talk to you when we're done, okay?
Okay.
The Motorcycle Man Podcast is supporting David's Dream and Believe Cancer Foundation, helping families dealing with the effects that cancer has on their lives. So go to davidsdreamandbelieve.org to donate. And the Gold Star Ride Foundation. If you'd like to be a part of a great cause and get some heartfelt miles in, go to goldstarride.org and learn how you can participate in the next Gold Star Ride. And don't forget, if you'd like to support the podcast, get on over to Buy Us a Coffee. That's right. Links will be on the website and, of course, in the show notes if you'd like to buy us a coffee and help the podcast out. And also, don't forget to get on our mailing list. Get on to motomenpc.com and you can sign up on our mailing list. And you will be among the first to know when a new episode is available and a new blog is available and if there is a new video available. So either way, get on over to sign up on our mailing list. All right, do that. And don't forget to get on over to the Ride with Ted videos. Check that out on YouTube. There's always a new video coming up. New one's out already. There'll be a new one coming up in a couple more days. So don't forget to get on out there and check out the Ride with Ted videos. Please subscribe. It helps out the YouTube channel. And of course, it does help out the podcast as well. And if you are the type of person who loves to read books, then get on over to Amazon and buy my book, The Road Most Traveled. It's available in paperback for $17.50, and it is also available as ebook for $5.99. So do that. The Audible book is coming. It's on its way. I am working on it right now. I hope to have it done within the next couple of weeks. And when I do, I will let you guys know. But please, go ahead and get the book. That would be greatly appreciated. Thank you very much, boys and girls. That is it. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and there's more coming, as always. So thank you very much for listening. So be safe, be happy, and don't forget, boys and girls, we say stupid crap so you don't have to. Bye-bye, kids.